Thanks, Rich. I'm here today talking about solitude, and we're going to include silence and stillness in that. It's all sort of part of the same package, I think, in terms of the practice. And again, my understanding of this, it used to be referred to, as this stuff's evolved, it's been put down to one word, solitude. It looks nicer on the material, I think. After being at a conference with probably 2,500 people, all in that kind of networky thing, so you've got to chat and be nice to people, haven't you, and nod and smile. I did try to avoid the huggers on the door, and they were quite extreme, Rich. Actually, you would have got, yeah, you were liable. But interestingly, I did have a really funny moment of unintended solitude during the conference, in that we came back from dinner a bit later than we needed to on the second night, so we couldn't get our usual seats. Now, we have usual seats at the conference that we've sat in probably for 5 years. They're our seats, they're where we go, but we were a bit late coming back from dinner, so we had to sit a bit further up at the top of the auditorium, which is not our chosen space, but nevertheless, we were up there. And I said to Dave before this, I said, oh, I'm really thinking this evening I'm going to go down the front in worship, because there's space and it's a really cool thing to do, and you can just get a real good sense of the Lord moving. So the time came for me to go down to the front. The offering had been done. The worship got back in. I went off to the loo, came back, and then kind of wandered down to the front, looked around, and there was no one there. Now, leading up to this, all the cool kids had been down there and the youngsters, but I kind of walked into this space and I just didn't know what to do. And Dave just said, I just went like that. But anyway, I was joined, fortunately, by the youngsters. But it was just funny, and that's the sort of situations I get myself into. But anyway, yeah, so thinking about solitude, the recommended reading for this, again, if you're following a particular plan with the Practicing the Way stuff, is this book, Invitation to Solitude and Silence by Ruth Haley Barton. Really good, really easy read. So I would recommend that. It's just great. So it's really full of insight, biblical truth, but lots of practical advice about this particular practice. The other book I'm going to be referring to a bit as we go through this is this one that I've read in the last couple of weeks, The Narrow Path by Rich Velodis. And this is all about the Sermon on the Mount, actually, but it covers some things that I think are helpful to us. And again, I'd really recommend that alongside, I think I mentioned, didn't I, The Familiar Stranger the other week by Tyler Statton. And again, if you're not into reading on these things, there's the podcasts, there's the videos, there's all of the Practicing Way stuff. But again, with all of it, it really is a very, you know, this is an invitation for you. You have to choose to engage at whatever level you feel you want to do that. And I'm, you know, my prayer is that everybody is engaging at some level or other. And interesting, while we were away, often spiritual formation and the practices got referred to. So Pete Hughes was talking about spiritual formation as being really important to them as a church, and it's been really helpful to them. So as people are coming into their church, getting free, getting delivered, they need a framework to live out their new life. And this Practicing the Way stuff and the spiritual disciplines, practices, call them what we will, are really helping people on the right way, the way of Jesus. And it's really encouraging to us, because we don't just pick these teaching series out of the air and think that's going to be the next good thing to do. Actually, a lot of this stuff is really going to help us, again, as God starts to move, as we think he's going to move. So I think in order to focus our attention around solitude, there's an interesting question that's posed in the Practicing the Way material. It says, what if the greatest threat to the Christian faith today isn't secularism, but is distraction? And we've talked about this a little bit in some of the other practices. And he says, here's the problem. We live in an era where it is possible to go through your entire life and never be alone. Even when we are alone, We're on our phone. We have access to the internet. We're in an entertainment queue. And again, if smartphones aren't your thing, and I appreciate for some people it might not be, there are other distractions in your life that can take you away from truly being alone. Our domestic tasks list, dramas we don't need to be involved in. Doing good deeds, I think, is one of those things that can distract us from being truly alone with Jesus. The cultural critic Cal Newport, in his book Digital Minimalism, writes, "It is now possible to completely banish solitude from your life, largely, I think, because of technology." Dallas Willard, the Christian philosopher and teacher on spiritual formation, said this: "Solitude and silence are the most radical of the disciplines for spiritual life. Silence is required to complete solitude, for until we enter quietness, the world still lays hold of us." And again, the threat of noise and distraction isn't just, you know, that threat to our minds or our bodies. It's in our souls. It's deep in here. And I ask myself this question, you know, how many moments have I missed where God wanted to speak to me or to shape me, but I've been distracted? And Ruth Haley Barton says, "Practicing rhythms of silence and words, stillness and action helps us to learn to wait on God, which doesn't come easily for those of us accustomed to busily trying to make things happen." I think we can all be in danger of that to some level. Mother Teresa had a profound understanding of silence and its importance, and she once said, "We need to find God, and he cannot be found in noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence." I love that. God is the friend of silence. So where do we start with this? Well, I think we have to look at the example of Jesus and what he did. So if we are really into practicing his way, then what did he do? Now, what we can see from scripture is what he had was a real rhythm of retreat and return. He retreated from people and distractions to be with God so that he could return to community in love and service. And he did it frequently. In Luke 5, in verses 15 to 16, it says, "The news about Jesus spread all the more so that the crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sickness. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed." And the phrase "lonely places" in the English translations, the Greek word, is of the Greek word eremos. But eremos can also be translated as the desert, the deserted place, the desolate place, the solitary place, or probably more familiarly to us, the quiet place. Here's a few alternative translations of that Luke 5 verse. This is a New English translation, I think that's NET. Jesus himself frequently withdrew to the wilderness and prayed. In the NCV, which I think is the New Contemporary Version, Dave, is that right? I think Jesus often slipped away to be alone so he could pray. And then in the Message, it says, "As often as possible, Jesus withdrew to the out-of-way places for prayer." So this is really, really important. And as I've said already, you know, we do find God in community with one another and in our relationships and with other Christians or disciples of Jesus. But we also find him in the silence. And it's there that we need to be, I think, really, really intentional about that. And this is about quiet times, to be alone with ourselves and with God. And that is so important. And I think about my own journey in this space. These times of spending time with God in silence or on my own, they are for me to hear from him. They're not necessarily all of the stuff that I might do to prepare to preach or whatever. Those times are for me to hear from him. And again, when we were away, we were so fortunate to hear from Simon Ponsonby in one of the seminars, and he preached from John 21, which a number of us had heard him preach from in the past, a long time in the past, and Alison said she'd heard him speak about this recently. And it was been really on my mind since this, because what he was talking about when he said to Simon Peter, "Do you love me? Feed my sheep," and all of the rest of it, was a very intimate moment between them. And I just keep having this thing in my mind now, "Do you love me?" So when I sit down and I come before God in silence and solitude, I'm in that moment hearing God say to me, "Do you love me?" And then you have the exchange, which is just beautiful in that moment. So I think the invitation to practice solitude and silence offers us three opportunities for encounters, three different types of encounters. We have an encounter with ourselves, with our enemies, and with God himself. Henry Nouwen, one a renowned theologian, said, "Solitude is not a private therapeutic place. It is the place of encounter." So let's think about encountering ourselves. We can, again, go into these spaces being tired and worn down by the stresses and strains of modern life. We can expect our time of solitude. It describes it in the Practice in the Way material as a kind of day spa for the soul, which I kind of like the idea of a day spa for the soul. I like day spas, full stop. And sometimes it is like that when you come into to meet God, you know, the whole Psalm 23 thing about, you know, he makes me lie down in green pastures, he leads me beside quiet waters, and it is there that he refreshes my soul. But I think as well, sometimes it's less like a day spa. And I think this is some of the stuff that I'm learning through this material, is that actually being on your own completely and just you before God, you can get away from people, but you can't get away from yourself and what might be going on in your own world. And it is in those spaces of solitude that we might carry our pain or the things that trouble us or past traumas into that space, because it's just us and God. Yeah, from Jesus, though, we learn that to get free from our pain, we have to face our pain. And this is really what he did, I think, on the evening before his crucifixion in the garden. He goes to that place of pain to meet God there. He gives God his feelings, his desire. He puts over his complete trust into him. We see him find that quiet place where he can go and fully meet God. And it is through this simple act, but quite difficult practice of noticing and naming our emotions before God in prayer and offering up to him, that then we become deeply formed as the people that God has always desired us to become. It can be quite an emotional place. And then secondly, encountering our enemies. We can think about Jesus's encounter in the wilderness, can't we? That was largely, I think, spiritual battle, an encounter. You know, he had to encounter the world, the flesh, the devil, all in that place of solitude. And if you've heard about the desert fathers and mothers, that's really what they focus on in terms of their paradigm for solitude. It wasn't about Sabbath rest. So solitude and silence aren't about Sabbath. That's different. Although as part of your Sabbath routine, you might have moments of solitude and silence. But actually, solitude is a place for spiritual war. And the desert fathers and mothers, they base their entire lives off the story of Jesus and his 40 days in the desert. And they pointed out that Jesus went into the wilderness to fight, not to flee, to engage, not to escape, to win and not to give up. So when we go into the desert, we get that little distance from the world and we can see clearly all of the ways that we may have been caught up in this world, and it's in that space that we can resist all of the ways that we've been compromised by these three enemies. And then thirdly, encountering God. And I think this is probably out of... these are all important, but I think this one probably will speak to us the most in terms of getting into and practicing silence and solitude. Sharon Hodd-Miller said this. She said, "Jesus sought solitude after speaking to crowds, not because he needed to be alone, but because he needed to be known. Crowds are inherently isolating, which is why Jesus sought connection with his Father. If your call is to crowds, you need that relational tether all the more. So those of us that are used to doing this up front, sometimes we need, after being, you know, giving out in this way, we need to take ourselves off and have some peace and quiet. And it's in that space that Jesus would open himself up to his Father and draw on the Holy Spirit for strength, wisdom, direction and joy. And then he would go back to the people to love them and to serve them. As I said, I've been reading that book, The Narrow Path, and in there, Rich Velodis, he talks about something I hadn't heard about before. He talks about hiddenness as a bit of a practice, actually, and I think it's a bit the same as solitude in many respects. And it says in Matthew 6 and verse 1, it says, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven." And what he talks about in that book is hiddenness being a call to internal examination before God. This is the place where we get before him and we're honest and open. I suppose a bit like that encountering ourselves. And I think we have to understand, isn't it, that some of that deep work of the Spirit really takes place behind closed doors in the unseen. And we need to get away from the noise and distractions of this world to be able to do that and to do that fully. And for me, I really absolutely recognise this. And aside from being somebody that has to, you know, come and preach on a regular basis or do things in groups, actually part of my work is often spent with a lot of people, advising people in complex situations, communicating here and there. And there could be a tendency, and I think this is where hiddenness comes into this, for me to use though this or to use my workplace as my place to seek affirmation and encouragement about how amazing I am and what a good job I'm doing. But actually that's really unhealthy. And actually what I need to do is retreat from the crowd and get my affirmation from the right place. And Rich Velodis encourages us that hiddenness is cultivated by absence. So I do wonder whether Jesus withdrawing, especially after heavy duty ministry moments, was about not only getting before his Father, but to then not allow the crowd to influence him or put him too much on a pedestal or a platform. He needed to get his affirmation from the right place. In the book, he says, to be known and seen is our deepest longings. And where we find that is really important. But left to our own devices, and he's talking about technology here, pun intended, we get stuck in a never-ending cycle of performative spirituality where we seek to get from others what only can be given by God. So Matthew 6 and verse 6 says, here's what I want you to do. Find a quiet, secluded place so you won't be tempted to role play before God. Just be there as simply and honestly as you can manage. The focus will shift from you to God and you will begin to sense his grace. That's the version of the Message. In ESV it says, but when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So we should be feeling compelled to go to this place where it is just us and God, because that is the deepest place in our being. And I think, yeah, being hungry to hear from him, to know that we are loved by him, is just the most important thing. And again, in the Simon Ponsonby talk, he talked about, so that do you love me thing, that comes before everything first. Everything else just could go by the wayside if we're not able to answer that question. Yes, Lord, I truly, truly love you. Everything else, I think, comes out of that place. We should go to the place of solitude and silence to listen for his voice, to hear him speak over us, over our identities and our calling. Rich Velodis says, in silence we root ourselves in the company of Father, Son and Holy Spirit. I think it's also important actually to think about extroverts and introverts as kind of being a bit of a thing. So me as a natural extrovert, I could go, well, silence and solitude's not for me because of X, Y, and Z, and I need to be in the noise. And then equally for introverts, they can use silence and solitude as an opt-out, I think, from community. And I was speaking to Luke Goodway at Christmas about this, because I found myself over the years, and I think it's because of doing these practices and build them in, being more introverted. But I don't think that's what I've become, actually. And again, we talked about this because, again, Luke would say he's an introvert. He would say that, wouldn't he? I'm not being disrespectful to him. He is an introvert. I am an extrovert. But actually, I found over the years the benefit in needing to go into those quiet spaces on my own to be with God. And it's not just about enjoying the whole day when Dave's not in the house, because we still are both working at home together. He goes down to Weston once a week. That is not practicing solitude, although I've kind of made it feel like it could be. I mean, it's glorious, don't get me wrong, but yeah, there's so much more to this. So I don't think you can correlate the need to practice this particular area with your personality. Introverts do still want to be seen by people. And as I say, there are often times now that I really don't want to be the life and soul. These are not virtues. They are traits to help us understand where we might get our energy from and what drains us. But being like Jesus actually goes far deeper than these personality preferences. And Rich Valoda says, unless we regularly withdraw, we will eventually wither. Well, that's a bit of a warning there, isn't it? It's really, really important. So how are we going to do this then? So we've looked at the example of Jesus. We've looked at what might happen in that place of solitude with some scriptural references to how he did it and what we might want to consider. So how are we going to do it? I keep this thing in mind as I'm going through this series myself, is that information does not produce transformation. You've got to go and do it. But you've got to start where you're at. If you haven't done this, and you know, we're not here to shame people that haven't done some of this stuff, but you just need to start where you're at. And as we've talked about often with this, is following Jesus in this modern world is about doing less and not adding more and more into our already busy lives. Again, Henry Nouwen says, without solitude, it is virtually impossible to live a spiritual life. We do not take the spiritual life seriously if we do not set aside some time to be with God, to listen to him. So this is what I do. This is kind of how it looks for me at the moment. It's a bit limited, actually, when I've unpacked it. I thought I was kind of doing some immense stuff, but it's fairly straightforward. I've got a lot of work to do. But hey, so every morning, and this is pretty regular now, whilst I don't completely start the day in silence, I would like to do that. I don't. I try to do my devotional in silence before looking at my phone now. And I do that on my own in the lounge. So that is a bit of a practical thing. And then the other thing I started doing is doing the noon lectio thing. So the pausing in the middle of the day just to reset, to come before God for 5 minutes. It's actually 5 to 6 minutes, those little things are. It's not for hours and hours. And I do that. And then every evening, after I've done this routine that I don't know whether it does help with my sleep, who knows. I will have probably an hour of just reading and contemplating. And I've started to try and do the examine prayer as well, which again is a really good thing to do at the end of the day, where you come before God and unpack the good, the bad and everything in between. And then, as I said, I do have Tuesdays all on my own. And whilst it's a working day, I do try to have longer moments. Again, especially when I'm waiting for him to come back from work. That's a good time for me to be able to do it. The important thing, I think, though, is to not try to fill the time up. So whilst I might read my devotional, I might read a psalm, I might do this, if actually the whole point is to be still before God and to just be. That's really hard, isn't it? I think. Just be. Hear him say, do you love me? Respond back. yes, Lord, I love you. And that's, it's as straightforward as that. And I recognise that beginning of the day might not work for everybody. It might not work for your personality or stage of life. I would love to be able to say that I want, you know, could get up earlier. I can't. It isn't how I'm wired. I'd love to do it. I might try and push the boundaries on that again as I'm, you know, becoming more mature in these things. But actually, it is really good, isn't it? The first thing you do when you get up is to spend time with the Lord. Henry Nouwen asked Mother Teresa for spiritual counsel, and she told him to spend 1 hour each day in adoration of your Lord. Whilst life is busy for us all, but many people find that the hour gives the necessary space to do all of the stuff that you might want to do and hear his voice. That'd be lovely, wouldn't it, an hour? So perhaps that's something we can kind of challenge ourselves to do, is move towards, you know, a full hour of quiet before we touch the phone, open the laptop, put on the news. Again, the news is a real distractor, isn't it, at the moment? In the material, it talks about finding a place to retreat. So you might want to go outside, go for a walk, go to a different room in your home if your space allows. You know, create your quiet space where you go and meet God. Grab a coffee, light a candle. Just make sure the space is right so that you can be without distraction or interruption. I would try doing a solitary walk this week, again, particularly when the weather's like this. Again, if you've got access to a local park, or if you've got things like National Trust membership or whatever it might be, go and be with God in creation and try and notice those things around you and receive it as a gift from God. It's easier when it's like this, isn't it, to do that? But actually, equally as powerful, just getting out in all kinds of weathers. I would encourage you to cut the background noise out. I used to always work with the news on in the background, and then I started putting it on mute, but it was still there. I could still see it and read the headlines. I don't do that anymore during the day. It's gone. And okay, yeah, I'm working. But actually, just having quiet for the whole day really, really helps. This is something I haven't done, and I would love to be able to do and have self-control to do it. Digital Sabbath. Put your phone away for a whole day. It's really hard, isn't it? Because my Bible's on my phone and all of the stuff's on my phone. There are ways of doing these things. Practicing the Lectio Divina. And again, a lot of us have got into that over the last year or so. Again, that spiritual reading of scripture, reflecting on it, responding and resting in God's presence. Actually, there is a Lectio version of the Bible out. You can't get it on Amazon at the moment. It's not available in this country yet. And it is basically, John Motcombe has taken the Bible and taken all of the chapters and numbers and all of the rest of it. So you just read it for reading it, so you just can read it more slowly, I think. There are plans to do that. I've got it on order, so I'm going to start doing that. And again, he talks about doing a listening prayer. So where we sit and we say, God, please speak to me. Or, God, is there anything you want to say to me? And then we wait. And often, I find, the very first thoughts that come to my mind, if they're not like my shopping list or whatever, is from God, if you allow just that little bit of space. Something may come to mind or it might not. Either way, it's fine. Our job is to listen, not to make God speak. And then there's a whole next level of silence and solitude by actually, like, you know, taking whole days to go on retreats. And they talk about things like going off to monasteries and all of the rest of that kind of thing. And that might be fine. You might think that's what you want to do. Again, but start where you're at. I wouldn't suggest, if you haven't really done much of the other stuff, going and doing a whole day in a monastery or whatever. I think John Mark Comer talks about and stuff. He did a 21-day silence and solitude retreat. No phone, no books, nothing. That feels painful to me. Really, really hard. And again, I would weave this into the other things that we're doing. So prayer, fasting, your Sabbath, whatever it might be. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer said this. He said, "We are silent in the early hours of each day because God is supposed to have the first word. And we are silent before going to sleep because to God also belongs the last word." So in conclusion, Ruth Haley Barton said, "Solitude at its most basic and profound level is simply an opportunity to be ourselves with God." And we do know, don't we, from God that he's often, well, hearing from him, he's often in that quiet whisper, in the secret place, and is sometimes not even recognised when he stands right in front of us. We're all familiar with the scriptures in 1 Kings and 19, and this is verses 11 to 12 in the Message. And it says, "Then he was told, 'Go and stand on the mountain at attention before God. God will pass by.'" I like this idea, and it comes out in Tyler Statton's book, that God is always wanting to pass by. We just have to make ourselves available in the right space with the right listening ears to hear him speak. A hurricane wind ripped through the mountains and shattered the rocks before God, but God wasn't found in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake, but God wasn't in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, fire, but God wasn't in the fire. And after the fire, a gentle and quiet whisper. When Elijah heard the quiet voice, he muffled his face with his great cloak, went to the mouth of the cave and stood there. And then the quiet voice asked, and he heard from God in that space. I think there's also a similar encounter on the road to Emmaus where the travellers don't recognise that Jesus is walking close by. They just don't recognise it. And I think we just have to remember that God is also always passing by. Ruth Haley Barton presents this beautiful image of God who waits for us to step into his presence from our busy spaces to meet with him. She says, "The invitation to solitude and silence is just that. It's an invitation to enter more deeply into the intimacy of relationship with the one who just waits outside the noise and busyness of our lives. He is waiting for us. It's an invitation to communication and communion with the one who is always present, even when our awareness has been dulled by distraction. It's an invitation to the adventure of spiritual transformation in the deepest places of our being, an adventure that will result in greater freedom and authenticity and surrender to God than we have ever experienced. So ultimately, the invitation to solitude and silence and stillness is an invitation to intimacy with God. St. John of the Ladder said in the 6th century, "The friend of silence comes close to God." So in finishing, here's the invitation. Do you want to come close to God? And if so, then you need to follow Jesus into the quiet place. Amen.